So thank you all for coming. I know Wednesday at APHA gets hard. Four in a row, this gets a little hard, and you're all sitting. So thank you for hanging in there. So my presentation is a little bit of a different focus than some of the ones that have gone on so far. There was a poster earlier this session, earlier this conference about some of the qualitative findings and some of the other hypotheses, but this is sort of the bigger full picture. And I do invite questions at the end, or, you know, if I have time, I may be shorter than some. You're welcome to interrupt me. I'm familiar with it. So this study was looking at the power of pink and looking at sustained physical activity in a community-based setting. And I'm very fortunate to have had community support from an existing race, and that's the Women's 5K Classic, which is an area nonprofit, which I'll mention. And I also had a lot of help from my two graduate students who have since graduated. Kathleen Lynch, or Kathleen Catcher now, and Noelle Witzke. So I am grateful to them for their support. And no financial things to disclose. So I realize probably many of you are physical activity researchers, or you wouldn't be here, or practitioners, and many of you are probably physical activity section members, so this is very much known. But of course, we have guidelines for physical activity in this country. They are, you know, for adults, and this is specific to adults, as I'll discuss. Looking at a combination of moderate to vigorous physical activity is really where we see the majority of the health benefits, although as some have alluded, and there's increasing evidence to say more is better than none, some is better than none, you know, so the more the better, but anything is better than sitting and doing nothing. So this would be the goal, and unfortunately we are not there. And we do know that ultimately there is pretty substantial disparity with regard to attainment of physical activity goals across the country. And some people mentioned racial and ethnic disparities. Some people mentioned disparities based on cognitive functioning, based on, you know, veteran status and so forth. And those are very, very relevant. And we also see with regard to gender, which is really where a lot of my work falls. So we do know that the majority of American women are insufficiently active, meaning that they are not meeting these physical activity guidelines. And accordingly, are all the comorbid conditions and increased risk of morbidity and mortality, which have been beaten to death over the course of this conference, as well they should be, I suppose. And so just to highlight some of that disparity, if this is not your area of work, this is from Healthy People 2020 for the targeted goals and the lines right here. We have female versus male, and we do see that, in fact, females were below the 2020 target and further well below males with regard to attainment of physical activity recommendations. And following below is a whole bunch of racial and ethnic disparity, which has been covered and is also relevant and bears mentioning as well. I will also follow that with, this is a piece from an earlier study of my colleagues, but it bears mentioning that it is not only among adult women, which is where the focus of my current study is, that this really begins well prior. And so we see in this little chart here, the blue bars were the boys at both fourth grade, sixth grade, and eighth grade. And at each level, you notice the girls, which are represented in the pink bars, were substantially below. And further, in terms of my concern, is that if you look kind of across the groups, the boys were relatively consistent through adolescence and into adulthood, still well below 100% in terms of their, you know, goal of attaining physical activity recommendations, but when we look at the heavily active females, there's a precipitous drop off through adolescence, and then it retains through adulthood, which is where I'm headed now. So, as much as there's all this really bad news with regarding physical activity and physical activity participation and health, kind of juxtaposed to that are some really interesting community phenomena and interesting opportunities perhaps for physical activity. So community-based 5K races, or community-based races in general, quite honestly, are increasing. They're increasing both in the numbers of events being held across the country and increasing in terms of the amount of participation overall. And beyond just these increasing numbers everywhere, if you look at the chart here provided by the Running Times and Running USA, who've surveyed this over a number of years, chart, the blue bars, the blue portion of each bar represents male participants. You see originally, you know, back in the early 90s, males were the vast majority of participants and finishers in these community-based races. And currently, not only has participation, as I said, increased across the board. It really has. Female participation has really steadily increased, and females now represent the majority of finishers in most community-based races. And so I think that this has always sort of struck me as an interesting opportunity. We consistently hear females are less active, females are less active, and yet we have this opportunity where in certain cases they are more active. Okay, so we have that fact about increasing opportunities and increasing races, and that over 50% of the field in many events is female at this point. Unfortunately, though, it is important to note that there's a previous line of research that began in Europe, and that research is now in Australia, but it demonstrated that particularly in women-focused events, not everyone going into these events is adequately trained or is meeting physical activity recommendations going in. Many will uptick a little bit in activity, perhaps, after signing up, but they're still well below the thresholds of goal in terms of our national standards, which, as we know, increases injury risk, increases the risk of having, frankly, a suboptimal performance or a really rough day, the whole running and feeling like you're dying situation, which then comes back around to discourage future participation. So that was a concern. And then we have to think about what happens after. You know, what type of drop-off occurs afterwards? And I put some pictures here just to bear in mind the context of my current study was surrounding a breast cancer event. But I do want to point out that in many communities, and I see some nodding, this is not exclusive to women or to breast cancer. The concept here is that many nonprofits, from schools all the way up to major, you know, national level nonprofits, have used fitness-based events for fundraisers or for the general awareness campaigns over time. And so we see here the Guts and Glory 5K is a national event of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, and that's a 5K. It's marketed as a 5K run. So, of course, it's going to get, you know, some walkers and a range of participants, but that's probably a little bit on the higher end in terms of, you know, intensity. At the very bottom, we see the Avon two-day typically walk, which is walking a marathon on Saturday and then walking a half marathon on Sunday, surrounding a whole lot of fundraising. So that's walking, but that is a significant volume of walking that does, in theory, if you're going to do it safely, require some amount of training and physical activity. And then we see some other types of events, and this is just a very small sampling, but we have the Leukemia and Lymphoma Societies, their night walk, and Great Strides for Cystic Fibrosis, and these are just, you know, a few. So I just wanted to point out that this is potentially, when we look at community-based opportunities, an area where we can look a little bit because these things are existing. And in public health, we know, unfortunately, there is never enough time, and there is never enough money. And so if we can tap into events that other people are organizing for their own purposes, even if they're different than our ultimate broader goal, it might be a way to move the needle a little bit on some of the outcomes that we are interested in. So that was some of the premise of this study. And ultimately, this is what I'm presenting today, is data surrounding a baseline. It was a pilot study. We wanted to get a baseline sort of number on how physically active are women entering these races, how many of them are meeting goals, and then what happens afterwards? Big part of the question. And then there was a couple of follow-up questions surrounding different subgroups. Did women who had been physically active for a long period of time fare differently than women who were newer, as well as different health status questions as well. So that was the premise here. So generally how we did it, this was a longitudinal community-based participatory research approach, which is exciting and slightly messy, as I will talk about as we go. So we drew a lot of input from the community group that puts on this event. It's actually a completely volunteer-run event. So we drew a lot of input from them, as well as from the women who were early registrants of the event, and we pulled some feedback from them in terms of some of the outcomes and questions that were of import to them. I do want to mention that part of my draw as a researcher to this particular event is that it includes a range of activities. So I haven't tested it, but I have a suspicion that if I were doing this with like a Spartan obstacle race or, you know, a very hardcore marathon, we'd see probably a different range or a different type of participant coming out. This particular event draws very, you know, draws many, many people, but it has effectively, it has a 5K run as advertised. It has a related 5K walk, which is a race walk, and there are some speedy women, watch out, as well as the just leisurely walk in the park. And then because there was another community event in the area the following day, they offered the 16.2 combo where you did the 5K run on Saturday for this event and a related half marathon the following day, and you got extra prizes and t-shirts and so forth. And there's also the Associated First Strides program, which is a mentored training program for novice participants. So it had the opportunity to draw in a range of people. And we do see historically that people would sign up as a team, as a worksite team, as a family team, as a team in support of someone who was going through breast cancer. So not everyone was the hardcore runner, although certainly there are some. Okay. We collected data over several months. So we had a pre-event physical activity inventory. So we collected data in the month prior to the event, in theory at the height of their physical activity and training. And then we had a 1 month and a 3 month post-event follow-up. Okay. Lots of things were collected. I can't get into all the details just based on time, but we did have all participants completed the survey data, which included the IPAQ physical activity inventory, the enjoyment, the PACES scale for enjoyment and physical activity, the social support scale that's been alluded to earlier. We collected data on environmental attributes, having places and spaces for physical activity, potential barriers in terms of role conflict in life, various demographics, as well as health indicators. We also had a smaller subset of our study where we collected pedometer recorded step counts, as well as objectively measured height and weight for BMI. This is an indication of me and some of my study assistants and some of my researchers in the back, and I will remind you that community-based participatory research is hard and messy, and so here we are standing on a table at the some of their training sessions, recruiting people in our sweats, which is very, very classy. So our participants who were in the pedometer group were given research-grade pedometers. They were given a diary, a seven-day diary, to complete surrounding the time that they'd also be completing the seven-day recall on the survey. We also contacted them by a text message each day in the morning to remind them to wear it, and they had the opportunity to respond to us with their total steps for the day via text message as well as on their diaries. And we got data back in multiple ways, and some of them were hardy. They gave us, you know, their data six ways, so at least we got it. So we ultimately originally had data on well over 400 women. There were some duplicates. There were some issues in terms of some of the surveys, so our analytic number was just below 400. We see a range here in terms of the participants, but I will point out that they were predominantly in their mid-40s. We restricted our study to 18 to 65, and that was only because the physical activity guidelines are different for adolescents and they're different for older Americans. And so we just wanted to kind of, for study purposes, keep it kind of tight. And you see the range of their different participation. One thing I will point out very briefly is that the survey tools and the objective measures turned out, fortunately for us, very, very well, and they were highly correlated. So as not surprising, measured BMI was higher than self-reported BMI, but they were highly correlated, and ultimately both fell within the obese range on average with regard to BMI, just considering that these were women, you know, active women to some extent, that was notable. We also had our groups, the METs, based on their survey, were broken out into some different levels, and then the step counts related to those levels of the women who participated in both. Because the participants in the objective measures of step counts were a little lower, some of these, although they look different, did not turn out to be statistically different, but it was at least, in my mind, a little bit reassuring that in the tools we used were sensitive enough to pick up differences. So we see these two were significant. The difference between high and low was also significant. The difference between moderate and low was not, although looked different. So that was, it is what it is. The bottom line here is that I want to point out briefly is that the proportion of highly active participants declined post-event. And if you look here at the first bar there under high METs, we see that it declined across. Moderate was pretty consistent, but then the low increased. So we really saw sort of the shifting downward over time. We did also lose a fair number of participants from the pre-event to the 1 month, although we retained them 1 month to 3 months, and that was an issue I'll discuss. We looked at motivating factors, and they were allowed to check all that applied. And these categories were somewhat driven by us and somewhat by them in the development. I have to say, many of them came for the cause, and then when asked what was their primary focus, about half said that the cause itself was their primary focus. Okay, so that was those data. And we did see a decline, differences in decline between group differences between those who came for the cause versus all others. And so those who came for the cause were more highly active at first, but they really did drop off, although they remained higher than all the other women even at that point. And so, unfortunately, time precludes this. We do see a whole lot of differences in terms of the between group levels. And what I just want to kind of wrap up here is that we, as a concept, found that ultimately the events attracted less active women. But so it was, in theory, a cue to action and bringing them to the event, but it did not necessarily sustain them afterwards. And so in a broader context with a higher sample size now, we're redoing the study and looking at different messaging and different opportunities after the event to keep them engaged in activity. But I would encourage any of you working with communities to look at these sort of opportunities that already exist and seeing how we might piggyback our longer term goals on their short term fundraising or participating or, you know, whatever goals for the benefit of all. And so that's kind of summed up here. And that is the end. Thank you.